Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Don Culp. Don is a recently retired, has been recently retired from the Army with a diverse military career, including roles as a judge advocate, warrant officer, Apache pilot, and chemical operations specialist. And today we'll discuss his journey, the challenges that he faced, and his foundation, the Braylon Aubrey Foundation, which he started in memory of his daughter to help children with impairing conditions. So before we get into all of that and your background and story, Don, I want to welcome you to the show. I'm really glad to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to share about her story and kind of how the foundation came about. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get into all that, I mentioned a little bit about your military career. Definitely a diverse career. You kind of dipped your toes in a lot of different areas there. Tell us a little bit about the journey in the military and the different roles that you held in your career. And I do believe this is the first time I've had a warrant officer on the show. If I'm not mistaken, if I have before and somebody's listening to this, like, hey, I was a warrant officer, I forgot, and I apologize for that. But warrant officers are hard to find, aren't they?
Well, it depends on the branch that you're involved in. You know, amongst the Army worldwide, you know, you rarely come across, I mean, you'll come across them, but generally in small amounts. But, you know, they've increased the field in which warrant officers are involved in. But, of course, with aviation, I mean, that's all you're around is nothing but warrant officers. So every time you hear somebody come to you and say, well, man, warrant officers are so rare. Well, I'm thinking, well, not in my world, because there's every person to your left and right is a warrant officer in most cases. But yeah, I joined when I was a kid, my stepdad was with the Blue Angels, and you know, Top Gun was my favorite movie, and everything said that I was going to be in the military. So the thing is I was supposed to go into the Navy. Well, when I was 16, taking my ASVAB. Well, let me back up. I was in JRTC, and we had a recruiter come to our class, and he was talking to us, and his name was Sergeant First Class Wyatt. And Sergeant First Class Wyatt talked to me about the Army and the benefits of being in the Army, and he talked to me about money. And so a young guy, 16 at the time, I was interested in dollar signs. So he goes, if you want to be $30,000 richer, we can make that happen. And so I was like, sign me up. So long story short, I wound up enlisting in the Army in March 13th, 1997. I went to basic between my junior year and senior year. The job that I agreed to enlist as was a chemical operations specialist. So I had known that I wanted to fly. However, again, me being young, me being motivated by money and all that stuff, I wound up getting... I fell for it. Hook, line, sinker, joined the Army, and became a chemical operations specialist. And I was at MOS for about, 8-9 years. So junior year, senior year, that summer, basic training. Then after I graduated, I went back and did AIT. I finally got the opportunity to be a warrant officer candidate and get the opportunity to be looked at for going to flight school in 2008. All that kind of fell into place for me. And, I went to Fort Rucker, now, Fort Novosel, did flight school. And, I was basically aviation, involved in aviation from 2008 to 2017-ish timeframe. And then, after that, I did warrant officer retention for a little bit, telling people the benefits of being a warrant officer, what it's done for me and the opportunities that could be made available to them and how it could transition well over to the civilian side with certifications and everything. And then there came a time where I was looking at trying to get back to aviation. I was trying to get back to aviation and everything. And long story short, I wound up having to make a decision, and I wound up sticking around for a little bit longer in the Army and wound up going over to the JAG Corps. I was in the JAG Corps for about 2 years. I knew that I was up for promotion. So I stuck it out until I made CW4, and I was able to actually pick up CW4 and then retire. I had my packet. I knew my promotion packet was up. I knew I was getting looked at, and I had timed everything to where I was going to pick up CW4 and then be able to retire 2 months later. So that is kind of my story, and that's how it's kind of ended.
Sure. And so this brings us up to about what time frame? When about was this that you retired?
Oh, so I just retired December 31st, 2023.
Okay, so recent, like
Yeah.
that's just within the last few months here. So
Correct. Yep.
you're fresh out,
I am.
and getting out there. So I mentioned in the beginning your daughter faced some significant medical challenges. Tell us a little bit about that story and how that kind of impacted obviously your lives and where you saw your career going kind of during all of this.
So, Braylon was actually born right before I left, right before I was supposed to leave for flight school. Braylon was actually born just 5 days before I had to report to Warrant Officer Candidate School. And so when you move, it's actually, well, it's a PCS move to Rucker because you're generally there for, or Fort Novosel, you're there for anywhere from, it can be, at the time it was 18 months or greater, depending on the aircraft you fly, depending on holdovers between phases of training and everything else. But so I left. I had to report the first walk January 22nd, 2009, and then my wife was at home with my in-laws, her parents, because she had had a C she had a C-section, and she had to wait to heal up. She couldn't move down there until she was ready to go. Plus, I was not going to be there because I was in candidate school for the first few weeks of moving down to Rucker. So I had to load everything up in a U-Haul in the snow. It was one of the rare times that it actually snows here in South Carolina. Go figure. So I had to get everything loaded up. I had my brother and then meet me at the house that we were going to be living in. And I had to report to candidate school the very next morning. And so while there, while at candidate school, I was away 6 months into the whole flight training journey, if you will, flight school journey. 6 months into it, our daughter started displaying issues. The she would have like minor eye deviations in front of us. So I would come home and I would always hold her, and my wife would hold her too, but she tended to do this maybe more in front of me than others. Her eyes would start to deviate and go to one side versus the other. And I always joked around and I was like, I guess she's not too fond of me. I guess she doesn't like me very much. That was kind of a running joke, but little did we know that she was actually having minor seizures in front of us.
Oh.
And 6 months in, 6 months into the actual journey, I had come home. My wife had been with her, and she wound up, she was lethargic, white and lethargic. She was on the floor. She actually was having a seizure, which required her to go to the hospital. And little did we know that this would start the journey of multiple visits to the hospital. And she would actually require overnight stays. She would require, being life-flighted from Alabama to Pensacola, Florida, because they, in Enterprise, Alabama, they weren't equipped to treat her. And so this continued on for the majority of her time frame, her life. And so my wife was dealing with this and required multiple trips to the hospital. And I eventually deployed after graduating flight school. We moved back from Fort Rucker, Fort Novosel, back to South Carolina. I deployed, and during which time, she was hospitalized 2 more times. And then she had this great time frame where everything was just fine. She started walking, talking, feeding herself. My wife taught her how to do sign language and everything else. It was this huge, just increase in her abilities. So that being said, about 6 months after we had come back, or I had come back, she ultimately wound up being put to bed and put to sleep one night, and woke up the next morning, and unfortunately, she had passed at the age of 3. And so What we found out about her condition as we went through all the hospitalizations, she had a chromosomal deletion, which in addition to that, she had seizures, and she was just developmentally delayed, like the milestones that normal kids hit between the ages of, you know, from the time that they're born to about 3 years old, she was behind. And so she was getting different types of therapy to help assist with that. We had therapists come to the home. She would go to places off post. That was while we were at Fort Novosel. While deployed, we had therapists come to the house, and my wife would take her to places as well. And my wife would work with her to try to get those skills going. So all of that together, that kind of was how the whole flight school thing, the whole transition to flight school, and then her unfortunate passing, all of that was intertwined, and all of that occurred within that first 3 year time frame within the aviation MOS, if you will.
Right. Gosh, you know, I'm thinking about time periods and stuff like that. My first born was born around that same time period, 2009. And I was deployed to Afghanistan a couple months after he was born. And I know just for me, like, I felt like I barely knew anything about being a father when I got back from my deployment. And my wife was over there, she's slinging diapers and she's making the baby food, and she's got everything kind of handled and everything. I felt like I lost out on such a significant chunk of his life. You know, at that point, and it was a significant chunk because he was only, you know, 2 months old or so when I left. But I think about it now, hearing your story, and, you know, you said there was a deployment in there for you. I don't know time period wise, but when you think about the entirety of her life, that's a much more significant, you know, percentage. You know, my son's 14, almost 15 now. And gosh, my heart just breaks hearing this story that you and your family had to go through with all of this. You know, especially, you know, okay, fine, there's some medical issues. You take her to the hospital and, you know, get things kind of straightened out. And there's a period of time when things seem like they're going okay. You know, maybe not perfect, but they're okay. And then this kind of hits you. You know, where she goes to bed one night and doesn't wake up the next morning. And that, my heart breaks. I'm truly sorry that you and your family had to go through this. But through all of this, you started the Braylon Aubrey Foundation, right? Tell us about that foundation and what its mission is and how it's out there to help other folks.
So you mentioned time frames, and so literally the transition to Rucker happened again 2009. She was born in 2009. I deployed 11 to 12, when I came back, it was 6 months after the fact when she passed. So it was literally those 3 years. Because of the issues, the reason I started the foundation, you know, I was doing my training, I was away, and, you know, there were, when she started walking, I saw that in the form of a video that my wife sent to me. And there were things that I missed that we have other children, and they're like, my oldest is, getting ready to be 23. Since Braylon's passed, we've had two other children. So, we have a 9-year-old, and then we've got a, 5-year-old. My Braylon would be, 15 right now. And so she would be like right in the middle, as far as all of our kids. But, you know, the things that I've experienced with the other kids, I didn't experience with her. And there was kind of a wedge. You can call it self-created. I don't know if that's the right term to use, but, with the typical bond that I had with my other kids, I didn't have with her. You know, she very much leaned to my wife. Her and my wife had a very strong bond, and my wife was there and did exactly everything that she could to the best of her ability with treating Braylon's conditions. So in a sense, because of not having those things and her life being cut short, I've personally felt the need to do something. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I did want to do something. So what wound up happening was is I created the foundation. And through the foundation, I was originally going to focus on trying to help children with impairing conditions specific to the chromosomal deletion that my daughter had. The problem with that is it's so rare. If you're going to make an impact, it just wouldn't be of any impact is a good impact if you can make a difference in somebody's life over some or no one's, but I wanted to make a bigger impact. So I decided to broaden the scope of the actual foundation to any child with impairing conditions. And the whole purpose is to do what we can to help them in their pursuit for a better quality of life, whether it's resources for them, whether advocating for them, which the advocating part still working on. There's been some advocating done for special programs that we know of that we experienced ourselves through the military, one of them being actual EFMP. But that being said, that is our main mission is to advocate and help special needs children have a better quality of life. So the foundation was actually started in 2018.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask when about that foundation came to be. Was it, right after, or was this something, a few years down the line? So it seems like, a few years down the line. And now you talked about like programs through the military. And obviously you want to advocate for those types of things to be available. But there are some programs that already exist. I think you mentioned one there. So there's at least that program. For me, I think part of it would be in like an awareness campaign to make sure that people who have children with these types of disabilities that they know that programs like this exist. Because sometimes there's just so many out there, you can't possibly know all of the programs, and oftentimes they go underutilized because while they exist, people may not know that they exist. Is that kind of an issue that you see with some folks?
I think there's, if you did a research for different nonprofits, there's a plethora of them out there, and it's you'll hear this used in different ways, but some people are told life's about what you know, not who you know. And then in other cases, you'll hear about life's about who you know, not what you know. Well, I think it's a little bit of both, but in this case, when people are in a certain situation and they need help, it's more about what you know. People can feel very overwhelmed, especially in an un in a situation unfamiliar to them, especially in an unfamiliar location. And like for us, we were Enterprise, Alabama, when we were from South Carolina, and the only people that I knew were the people that I was in training with, and my wife knew a couple of those guys' wives or what have you. But we didn't know resources that were available to us. We kind of got a crash course in those things. And there were hiccups. The process wasn't perfect. But there was a lot of things that were given to us that in that time frame were very beneficial. So I'm a strong advocate for that program. Again, it wasn't always like it wasn't always perfect, but it was definitely better than nothing. And we had people trying to put us in the right direction. So.
Could you describe that program? Like, what was it that was involved that was beneficial to you?
Well, I mean, there was like a direct, I don't want to use the word liaison, but a coordinator, and that person basically directed us to different areas for care. And so luckily, my wife as well, she was also doing research as far as finding providers and stuff like that to get my daughter's care. So between that program and my wife doing her due diligence, I mean, everything just kind of benefited. Braylon, and things just kind of fell in line. But basically what it is it's a program where you get a specific coordinator, and they kind of assess your needs and they align you with the necessary programs that the military offers. So for example, whenever we first transitioned down to Fort Rucker, Fort Novosel, you know, we were living off post. Well, we were told that if, because we lived off post, Braylon didn't qualify for certain programs. For example, a therapist coming into our home and working with her. Well, so we were like, well, how do we make that happen? Well, you move on post. So we talked to the person that we were renting our house from about moving on post, and we moved on post. And then we started getting the necessary resources to have therapists come in the house to kind of double tap the therapy that Braylon was receiving. She had resources off post within the vicinity of, I forget the name of the town. Fort Rucker, Fort Novosel is surrounded by three towns, Daleville, Enterprise, and then one other town. And I can't remember the name, Ozark, Alabama. And so, she would attend Sumlar therapy off post, in Ozark, and then she would get in-house therapy. And that was all because of somebody telling us from the program, that this resource existed if you moved on post. So basically EFMP, they just take your need, they assess your need, and then they find the necessary specialists and programs that would benefit you in your dependents' time of need.
And it's great that you had somebody like that to advocate for you, or not necessarily advocate, but kind of push you in the right direction and allow you to take advantage of the services that were available to you. Because if you didn't have that, it would just be reliant on whatever research you happen to do and happen to come across. And that you may not have come across that particular stipulation that said, well, you can get this type of therapy if you live on post, but not if you live off post, type of thing. And then that's just one less thing that your family would be able to benefit from. And so, certainly for folks out there who are dealing with any sort of issues like this, get involved with that, get that person to help facilitate the whole process for you, make you aware of some of the things that are relevant to you. Because I know, I don't know every single situation, like what programs are presented to you, but I know a lot of times the way the military presents programs that are available to people. I know before we deployed and after we came back home, and as you're transitioning out of active duty and everything, like the way the military does it, it feels like you're drinking from a fire hose, where you're getting so many programs and so many things just thrown at you, and a lot of which you don't need. They're not relevant to you, but you're getting all this information. There may be one or two things that maybe you do want to use or you do need to use, but they kind of get lost in the shuffle with all the other noise that goes on there. So having someone who can look at your individual case, your family's individual situation, and say, this is what you need. This is how you go about getting access to it, and all the steps that are required. That to me sounds like a heck of a lot better than trying to figure it all out on your own, especially when you're dealing with a child who has serious medical issues too. Definitely having that support is got to be a blessing, right?
It was. I mean, and anybody that's got a child with a special need or that an impairing condition, that program is definitely beneficial. And again, it wasn't perfect. I don't know anything that is a perfect, seamless process. When you're overwhelmed, though, it is good to have a program. It's good to have an advocate there for you and to make you aware of things that you don't know. So for anybody in a situation like that, as parents, when you see your kid in a situation where they're hurting or they've got some sort of issue and you don't really know how to deal with it, you don't understand it, that's overwhelming in itself. Plus the way the Army presents the information to you, like you said, I think that's with anything that the Army does. They try to present to you all this information so fast, quick, fast, in a hurry, you have no time to digest, process it. And it's very much like drinking from a fire hose, not to mention the overwhelming circumstances that you're already facing as it is.
So, right. And I remember getting these flyers and brochures and things like that for all these different programs. And I had a stack of stuff. It was like, it was huge. It was just a huge stack of papers. It's like, I'm never going to go through all these things. Like, even if the thing that I need is somewhere in the middle of that, I'm not going to find it. They checked the box though. They gave me the information. That's one thing the Army, like you said, does really well, is they'll give you the information. But it comes quick, fast, in a hurry, and it's not always presented in the best way. So, and especially people who are new to an area like you were down there in Alabama, and you're not familiar with the resources that might be available in the community or even on base or, whatever, like that, that's not really the best situation to be in. So now you got a ton of research to do, because you can't even rely on, oh, I know, I had a neighbor, 5 years ago who told me about this place that they went to and with their kid. And, you can't rely on any of that kind of information because you don't have any of it. So having that advocate the person who's there to help guide you through that journey is definitely beneficial. Now, you talked about with your foundation, the types of stuff that you guys do. Are there specific initiatives that you do take part in to help either in the community or help with individuals? How does that all work?
So one of the main goals, I briefly touched on what our initial scope was of the foundation, what the initial objective was going to be, help those that have the same condition as Braylon. But that wouldn't have been impactful as I would have liked to have been. So we broadened the scope. So one of the first goals was going to be to give back to all the entities that played a role in my daughter's care, every place, because I felt like, whereas again, not everything's perfect, we had certain issues with certain things because it was our child was being treated and what have you. But I felt it was very important to give back, because I know that the overall mission and the overall impact that these places have on families and children is a pretty big deal. So the first goal was to give back to those entities. What I didn't anticipate is being able to do that within the first 2 years. And I don't mean just by a minor amount, but we were able to specifically, the very first thing we did was we participated in the University of Pennsylvania's ASPE program, where they are actually doing an actual study on this particular issue, the deletion, focusing in on the Norexin 1 gene, lack thereof. And we participated in a study to help them advance their specific study to help further understand the impact of this. So for example, I actually have the deletion myself. I passed it to her. Now, what the way she showed the deletion and the effects that it had on her, it doesn't have those effects on me. So it's very possible to be a carrier versus being affected by it. So it is a hereditary thing. So the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman Medical School, they're the ones that are conducting the research behind this. So the very first thing we did was get involved in that. Mm-hmm. So then, as soon as we started conducting our annual fundraising activities, we started giving back to all the entities. So the very first place that we gave back to was the Lexington 1 school district. We specifically said we wanted to go to their special needs program. And so their special needs program, Braylon was a part of that. That was the additional therapy, part of the additional therapy that she got when we came back after flight school. I was deployed. My wife was able to get that set up. But what that did was, is they take kids that are pre-K aged, and it's a program that's based that's designed to work with them to help bring them online so that they're ready to go by the time they reach kindergarten. So we purchased several items that they needed, that they specifically asked for, and they help within their one specific geographical area. They help in 2020, they had about 150 special needs pre-K age children. So that was the first area that we focused on. And then the second year that we focused on, we gave back to the Studer Family Children's Hospital, which is where Braylon was when she got life flighted from Fort Rucker to Pensacola, Florida. We gave back to Sumar Children's Therapy by buying equipment that they needed. We purchased wish list items for Prisma Children's Hospital, which when I was deployed, she was hospitalized and here for one. She was hospitalized twice. So one time was, I think, for a week. The second time was for almost 9 days, I believe. And then we made a actual monetary donation to Nemours Children's Hospital. 2022, 2023 timeframe, we started looking at the development of a special needs playground. And we also made a we purchased wish list items at the end of 2023 for the Sean Jenkins Children's Hospital in Charleston, their pediatric intensive care unit, because they have newborns there that have conditions and there's items that they needed, so we purchased those items. Our main focus now, we've given to all these entities. I'm looking further into advocacy. This whole nonprofit has been a learning process. We don't have a company that set it up for us. It was a step. I set it up. Every step, every I'm learning as I go. So the whole idea is to just be impactful. So essentially, the focus, I told you when I was a kid, all I ever wanted to do was fly. I told you the reason that I started the foundation was just because of a sense of not being there when my daughter needed me. Now I was doing other things, but that's what drives this. So the effort that I was putting into flying, I have now taken and put towards this foundation. And so I get asked, when I'm looked at as far as what the focus of the foundation is, I get looked at as, and I'm asked, so what are you going to do? What's next? Well, I've given back to these entities. We've done all the stuff, which I wasn't expecting to do as fast, and I'm thankful for that. So what's next? So I go from this to, oh, well, let's try to build a $1.7 million playground, and while we're at it, let's try to, with everything else that we have going on, let's try to do all this fundraising in the background too. So as of right now in the 2024 timeframe, that has been our focus. I've toured the facility where they build the playground. The company that builds this playground have built other ones around South Carolina that get good use. They do a good job. They invited me to come out to their plant. We had a paraplegic assess every aspect, every piece of equipment, meaning she actually gets on and utilizes what she can to play on the playground to see if it actually truly is a special needs an all-inclusive playground. And it's been designed to do just that. It's a 15,000 square foot playground with tons of shade. So kids that can't control or regulate their body temperature have a place to remain cool. It has transition points for kids that are in wheelchairs to where they can be out, go play on the equipment, come down, and then have another transition point where their caregiver can place them back in the wheelchair and they can move to another area on the playground itself. So I am still working the advocacy part. I'm still learning more about that. I'm finding out more about programs. The University of Pennsylvania, I have an ongoing relationship with them. They've promoted our 5K every year from Pennsylvania, and they're in the process of creating a foundation that's they're in the process of creating a foundation that's specific to their program. And they've consulted with me and gotten feedback with me with the things that I've done and basically spoke to me and just asked for my involvement with the creation of this board, this foundation from their standpoint, which I consider a university talking to me, a little guy like me about something like that. I think that's a testament to how effective we've been. And I think it's important to make that happen. So that's kind of where we are right now.
Well, that's actually, like you said, I was thinking that myself. It's like you got this big university with all these smart people walking around there, and they're asking you for your input. That's got to feel pretty good. Like you've done something right with all the things that you're doing, obviously, because otherwise if you completely botched it, let's put it this way, they're not reaching out to you to ask you for your help. Right. And so you did something right. And I think that's, you know, a testament to all the hard work and the dedication that you've put in, you and your family. I'm sure there's other people involved as well, but, you know, there's, a lot of work that goes into everything that you're doing. I guess knowing that there are people out there who care enough to put this much effort into this type of, you know, whether it's advocacy work or who just think to make a playground where their kids can go out and play on this playground, you know, where other playgrounds they may not be able to. Like somebody else is out there who cares about this. That is having an impact, you know, whether you know it or not. Like there are people out there who are, they're better off now because there are things like this, you know, in the works and the type of work that you're doing. One thing that struck me as you were talking, and I don't know if this thought had occurred to you or if it's something that's on the radar for the future, maybe a not right now kind of thing, but maybe somewhere down the line. But this may not be possible. There may be legal reasons why this is not possible, but the thought came across that there are families like yours who have to move their kid from maybe a rural area to someplace else, like you did with yours when she went to Pensacola. And I can't imagine that kind of flight was cheap to do, right? And there's probably some families out there who are like, I don't know how we're going to be able to figure that out. You know, maybe insurance, maybe it covers it, maybe it doesn't cover it, you know, in certain circumstances. But part of your background is aviation and flying, and that was something that you've always wanted to do. In the back of my head, I was like, wow, that seems like that could be a fit, is maybe helping some of these families get from A to B. You know, and again, there may be some reasons why, you know, you may have to have like medical staff and all that kind of stuff, why that may not be practical. But, you know, it's just one of those things that I was like, hey, if that could be a good fit down the line too. But, you know, there may be a lot more work as far as the advocacy and other things that you have going on that maybe that's not in the cards for you. And, you know, that may not be something that you're up for, but, you know, I was just thinking, you know, how can we impact as many people as possible? And that seemed like it could have an impact as well, but go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's funny that you mentioned that because one of the things, because of how closely the flying aspect and my daughter's life, like the time that I actually started flying, how they're intertwined, the time frames and everything, I've actually looked at trying to do that because I wanted to try to bridge the two together. And one of the things that my family and I kind of came up with just by talking, just having a mere discussion, the idea kind of just came, and it is a process to make happen. But in the future, you know, I'd like to be able to fly kids around that have an impairing condition, but they've never experienced flight, just to give them that, you know, that experience. Braylon was always happy despite her circumstances. Braylon smiled a whole bunch. She was happy, and she was just a happy child, even amongst her condition and her circumstances. And so seeing the happiness on another child, if you can give them that experience, that's kind of a big deal. And I would like to be able to fly them around just Columbia, because here you take off from Columbia, you've got once you hit 1,000 feet, I mean, you got Williams-Brice Stadium here, you got downtown Columbia right here, and then you got Lake Murray over here, and it's quite a view. And you do a 10-15 minute flight and come back around and land, I think that would just be a very impactful moment for kids. The other sure. half of that is we have already wanted there's been talk, and I don't know what this looks like yet, but it's there, is bridge the gap. You know, if there's people who can't afford a flight to go see a therapist somewhere in another state or somewhere further along the state, we bridge that gap. I know that there's another entity out there somewhere in the country that does something similar to that, but they're not local to here. And I don't know what their overall mission looks like, but that's something that I want to do too. And so I hope that with when the time presents itself, that we're able to do something like that. I don't know what the insurance looks like. I don't know what any of it is, but it's an idea there. But you know, at one point, right. this foundation, what's turned into this foundation, was also an idea too. And this sure. started because I got on Facebook and started typing random memories about my daughter. Things that I remembered from my standpoint. Mm-hmm. And my family didn't understand what I was doing. I didn't honestly know what I was doing either. I just wanted to do something, but I didn't know what that looked like. And then finally, it just kind of all came together to what it is now. So,
yeah. And I think with anything, like all these ideas have to start off as an idea and someone saying, you know what, that's just crazy enough. It might work, you know, and then you push it forward and you advance, slowly, right? You can't bite off too big of a piece at once. You're gonna feel like you're drowning. And when you have these types of ideas, you know, take it piece by piece. There's going to be some unknowns, right? You said things like insurance or, you know, other unknown, maybe some licensing or whatever that needs to happen that are unknown at this point. Well, you're going to have some research. You're going to have to figure some of that stuff out. But take it one day at a time, just like everything else. And I think the efforts that you're going through to help out other people, I think are inspiring. There are people out there who suffer a loss, like the loss of your daughter, and it almost paralyzes them, where they can't move on. And I don't mean move on as in a just forget it and, you know, that type of thing. That's not what I'm saying. It's just, you know, continuing to bring positivity into the world. And that's exactly what you're doing, is you're helping other people who were in your shoes, who are in the shoes that you were in, I should say. And you know from your experience just how difficult it is to go through the types of things that you had to go through. And just like that person who was able to help coordinate things on your end and make things just a little bit easier, not to say that everything was easy, but they made it a little bit easier. You're making it a little bit easier for other folks as well. You know, whether it's through donations to some of these organizations that helped you and your family out along the way, you know, that does help other families, whether they know it or not. There's that help there, because maybe there's new equipment or there's additional staff or whatever that could be utilized through whatever programs that they offer. And they may not have had that had it not been for the work that you're doing. And so there's some positivity there. And I think that's inspiring, honestly. I feel like more people can really learn from what you're telling us here and what your story is, and learn from that and use negative events or setbacks in their lives as fuel for something positive going forward. And hopefully you have it in you to continue doing this type of work, because you know, it is significant and it is helping a lot of people. You know, and so that is something that you should be proud of. You know, give yourself you know, the credit where it's due, you know, for that type of stuff, right? Before we wrap up this episode, I know there's probably some listeners who've heard your story here, heard about your daughter and the type of work that you're doing now. They probably want to get involved somehow. And I know like any nonprofit, you know, donations are certainly always welcome. Where can people go to find out more information about the foundation and make a donation, or if you need volunteers or whatever it is that you guys are looking for, where can people go to find out more information?
Okay, so we have our website at www.thebraylonaubreyfoundation.org. That specific website has our mission statement. It has what we're looking for. It has all the information regarding our annual 5K. It has information regarding the ongoing initiative to build this playground. And everything that we've done, everything that we look to do, everything about us is there. We also have our Facebook page. People can follow and stay updated with ongoing efforts and things that we're doing on the day-to-day basis. We also are on LinkedIn as well. So, and if anybody has any questions, they can also email us at BraylonAubreyFoundation@gmail.com.
Excellent. Well, I'll have links to your website, social media, and all that in the show notes so that folks can reach out and get in touch or make a donation or participate in the 5K. Is the 5K coming up anytime soon? Do you have it at a certain time of year every year?
Yeah, so we've actually this year we actually have our own personalized route this year. First time we were using somebody else's course for the prior years, and so it's specifically tailored to us. It is by another special needs playground that it's called Leo's Landing, that was actually built by the same company that we're trying to get to build ours. But it is on September 28th, and it is going to be, the race starts at 8:30. We also have for folks that are geographically restricted, well, because of technology, you don't have to be geographically restricted. We do offer a virtual option as well. The only thing that we ask is if you decide to register for the run, which you can do so at our website, on the 5K link, but, just get your registration in early so that we can send you all of your Braylon Aubrey Foundation 5K swag early enough. And we can make sure that you get stuff, because orders have to be in by a certain time frame for shirts, just to make sure we get them all on time.
Sure. Well, again, I'll have links to all of that in the show notes, and hopefully this episode will be out in enough time that folks can check it out and get involved in the 5K this year. If not, they can still make donations and do all of that kind of stuff through your website. So again, check out the show notes for all of that information. Don, really, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you for coming on and being open and vulnerable about the issues that your family went through and how you guys navigated some of those challenges. And additionally, how you are making the best of a bad situation going forward. And I think you guys are definitely an inspiration to many, many people out there who might be in a similar situation, and they need that boost of hope and positivity in their lives. So thank you, and continue doing what you're doing. I thank you for the work that you guys are putting in. It really is impacting some folks out there. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.